Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Now it is the day before the Fed statement, and that means a lot of people are more or less on hold, trying to, I guess, predict what the Fed's going to do and maybe get ahead of some of this undoubted volatility that usually happens around these meetings. We are chatting right now with Sean Broderick, editor of Wealth Megatrends, also Resource Trader. He is the natural resource specialist at Weiss Ratings. Now, Sean, we are chatting for quite some time off mic. You're sharing with us some of your at least strategy here throughout this week heading into this Fed meeting. And when it comes to that Resource Trader newsletter, you do focus on some of the larger companies. You're not diving so much into the smaller juniors, but you're mentioning to us that you had lightened up on some positions. Not all of your positions. I don't think even close to all of your positions, but you were trying to get ahead of some of this volatility and, quite frankly, just take some profits because a lot of different sectors, a lot of different resource companies have moved higher over the last few months. Take us through your strategy, Sean, and how it ties into this Fed week and also includes all kinds of other central bank meetings.
Sure. Well, as I was trained, it's never a bad time to take profits. And this is a great time to take profits, as you said, because these stocks have just been on such a run for the past few months. So we had some really nice gains. Now, on Wednesday, we are going to have the announcement from the Fed, but that's not the only central bank meeting and announcement this week. We also have the European Central Bank and the Bank of England on Thursday. And so kind of it's like triple central bank witching going on this week. And ahead of that, I decided to take some gains because the theory that I've come around to is that it isn't fundamentals that really move the market as much anymore. What has more effect now is the market's anticipation of the central bank either opening up the free money spigot or closing the free money spigot. And so I'm not sure exactly what the Fed will do. They have received plenty of news that would allow them to hold fast at this point, to do this one more rate hike that is expected and then say, you know what, we'll just watch things for now. We aren't planning on hiking. However, what we still have not seen happen is we haven't seen unemployment go up. And that really bothers the Fed because they think it's inflationary. Right now in the United States, there are still nearly two jobs for every job seeker. And the Fed hates that. The Fed hates what is in effect full employment. They want more people to be unemployed because they think that kind of balances out price pressures and stuff like that. So not only do I not know what the Fed's going to say in its statement on Wednesday, I don't know how the market's going to react to it. Right now, as you and I talked, the market is reacting like the Fed will be less hawkish. But the last couple Fed meetings, the Fed has really poured water on that and come out more hawkish than the market was expecting. So add these things up, and it was just a good time to take some nice gains that we've run up in the recent few months. Now, what if I'm wrong? What if the market takes off after the Fed announcement? I still have plenty more positions on than I sold. I'm absolutely happy if that happens. If not, then I just helped my subscribers protect the gains they have so that, you know, in case we get a real buying opportunity after the Fed announcement, then we can swoop in and pick up some things on the cheap.
Well, Sean, I'd love you just to unpack just even a little bit more. It doesn't have to be about these specific trades you just did, but just in general, how you manage a portfolio, because I would say 95% of the interviews we do are with people that are buying, but so few people ever talk about on our show or anywhere on the in the online world about when they're actually taking profits, when they're actually managing some risk. And I know that you don't just use just the stocks, but also option strategies. So as a portfolio manager or someone that's talking to resource investors and resource trader, how do you approach managing risk and pulling profits along the journey? Because it's not always time to buy. Sometimes it's time to harvest gains.
Yeah, well, I have long discussions with my editorial director about this. She thinks I take too many risks, especially in the precious metals market. We have been playing precious metals heavily. One reason is just because I saw the opportunity there. And so far, that's been right. You know, and I still think, by the way, precious metals are going to zigzag higher. But I have no problem with like selling some of those stocks simply because precious metal stocks are among those that react most badly to a hawkish Fed. If the Fed comes out hawkishly, you can expect some great precious metals companies, which if we were just talking about fundamentals, should probably be a lot higher. But as I said, this is a sentiment world market. We can expect those stocks to really take a step down. That's when I would want to buy them. And as crazy as it may sound, I just may buy back some of the ones I sold, right? Because we have nice gains. We can always do that. But just to give your listeners an idea of like what we sold Southern Copper, Kinross. We sold Newmont calls. We sold Barrick Gold calls. We sold just a bunch of things like that. We also sold Wheaton Precious Metals and some calls on that. We sold Hecla Mining. And so nice gains in all those things. And why shouldn't we take those gains? Because nothing travels in a straight line. Things have run up nicely. We're probably going to get a chance to buy them cheaper. And if not, what does that mean? That means that the other remaining positions that we already have on should do really, really well. And like, there are some things that aren't so dependent on the Fed. One thing I can think of, for example, would be lithium stocks. Those are dependent on like other things, mainly on the fact that China's reopening and like stuff like that. And so those will move. Those you don't have to sell so much when you're worried about the Fed news, you know? And I'm not selling oil stocks at this time, simply because those are less affected by the Fed, and I believe oil has higher to go. So I have some good picks there. But let's say oil stocks do go down when the Fed makes its announcement. Great for me, because there's plenty I'd like to own that I don't yet. So it is tough balancing risk and reward, but you have to take gains now and then. You just have to, because people who like speak about buying something at the bottom and then holding it for a 500% gain, A, that happens extremely rarely, and B, that kind of person locks up all their money. They might miss other opportunities as well. I'd like to have some cash on hand in case the event that's coming up, which in this case is three central banks making statements in the same week, in case that event drives prices, you know, lower a lot in a hurry, that's when I want to buy. So that's how I balance risk and reward.
So Sean, there's a lot of different resources out there that you can invest in. And even in the last couple of years, a few more that garnered a lot more attention from different types of investors, not just those resource-focused investors. You touched on lithium. There's also energy that has come back into the limelight, more the old school energy like oil, natural gas, although that has cratered. And then there's also the precious metals. Those have been around forever, and they're going to remain around. How do you rank the different metals in terms of what you think has the best longer-term outlook? Almost touching back on that Wealth Megatrends newsletter that's a monthly publication, how do you judge the overall megatrends for different resources?
That's a great question. I think gold is going higher, and usually when gold goes higher, silver also goes higher and it outperforms. It outperforms on the upside and it outperforms on the downside, or I should say underperforms. In any case, silver is the drama queen of precious metals. So my guess would be that's the one that will really outperform percentage-wise, but you might find better opportunities in the gold industry simply because those stocks that are real silver plays are so few and like far between, and they might have other problems as well that just means that they're going to underperform. Other metals, I like copper a lot here. I really do. And copper's been one of the things showing us that the global economy isn't nearly as bad as the doomsayers would like you to believe. Now, the doomsayers have their own reasons for it, one of which may be that they believe their own cooking. But I mean, looking at copper, looking at China reopening, looking at all that stuff, I think there's higher prices going to be all around for copper, nickel, steel, which comes from iron, of course. I mean, there's a lot of industrial metal opportunity as well. Moving on to the oil and gas area, I mean, we've been doing really well in oil. We had to sell some natural gas stocks because they weren't working out, and natural gas has gone lower and lower and lower. But when that kind of thing happens, I mean, that's when you start to look for opportunities. Even though I am bullish on oil this year. The way the way that natural gas has like sold off, I think you have to look for opportunities there right now. And one reason being because as much as that industry is under pressure right now, and it's mainly under pressure because they had warm weather in Europe, which means that their demand for natural gas in the winter wasn't nearly as high as anyone thought it would be. Well, one other thing that was weighing on natural gas is there's a company called Freeport LNG that exports liquefied natural gas, and their export terminal had an explosion and it wasn't exporting anything. Well, now Freeport LNG is looking to start the compressors on one of its three liquefaction trains at that export terminal. And so that tells me that that might put a bottom under liquefied natural gas. That might put a bottom under natural gas, period. So again, I like oil. I'll be buying more oil stocks, but I think you have to look for the opportunities in natural gas just because it's so cheap and those stocks are so cheap right now.
Yeah, Sean, it's amazing that natural gas, at least U.S. natural gas, was up close to $9 to $10 last year. Now it's under $3, around $2.70, $2.68 at the time of this recording. So it's created a different opportunity for people that maybe missed the first big run to get repositioned in natural gas and oil stocks. I guess I've got a question for you as far as all commodities you invest in, whether they're energy or metals. It sounds like a lot of the companies you look at are actually producers of the oil, of the copper, of the gold and silver, as opposed to the earlier stage exploration companies. And we interview a lot of people that are only focused on explorers. That's got a different risk profile. Why do you focus more on the producers and, you know, give investors that sometimes ignore those some rationale for how they can still be good returns in those?
Right. Well, I used to have a publication that really focused on the smaller stocks, the ones you hope will have a breakup, but you have to price in that there's going to be a lot of heartbreak, right? In those small, tiny explorers, many of them simply run out of money or what they're exploring doesn't work out and all that stuff. So for the subscribers that I'm writing for now, I prefer those companies that have some income so they can pay the bills and are going to be expanding their production or expanding whatever they do. I mean, because we also invest in things like refineries and stuff like that. So looking for those companies that can increase their cash flow. For example, we have Lithium Americas, which is not a producer now, you know, it's quite small, and yet it has a project in Argentina, which is about to go into production. It's going to spin that off into its own company, and so we'll get the shares for that. And also, it just signed a deal with GM to provide GM with lithium for its EV batteries. I think GM invested some insane number, $650 million into this tiny company. So Lithium America's stock is blasting off today. So I'm looking for those opportunities which are more of a sure thing than, say, your basic explorer. I'm looking for at least developers, and I like a developers with a real path to production that's quite clear, you know. And but I also like those companies that are actually producing, and either they're becoming more efficient or they're increasing production or something like that, so that they aren't just kind of sitting there. So especially in this kind of market, and I believe we are in a commodity super cycle, which brings me to my other publication, Super Cycle Investor, right? But we are in a commodity super cycle, which means that if you have enjoyed the run in like gold and like stuff like that, you ain't seen nothing yet. We are going to see higher prices this year and the year after, absolutely. And so it's good to be in a company that, since prices are going higher, basically that company is minting money. You know, it's actually producing gold, producing silver, producing any of the other nice commodities which we are making so much money from. Especially with China reopening, that has really changed the game. China is such a tremendous source of demand for all sorts of commodities. So that's also one of the things that I'm thinking about as well. Since China is buying now, you know, when I'm looking at companies, I want companies that can feed that hunger now and not those companies that will be coming on 4 or 5 years from now. It takes a long time to build a mine. In fact, it takes longer and longer because they've added more red tape over the years. So that's just something people should keep in mind. In my own portfolio, I do have, you know, junior explorers and stuff like that, because I don't mind taking those kinds of risks. But for my paying subscribers, they'd like to make money this year. And so, you know, I tend to tilt more toward that end of the playing field.
Oh, for some reason, Sean, we all love the pain that the juniors can provide to a portfolio, don't we? We just can't help ourselves. To your point, though, about development companies and how it is becoming harder and harder to actually build an asset with this generally higher cost environment, are you avoiding those then? Do you have to see companies that are in production now, or have you been attracted to any companies that are developers that aren't in production yet, but seem to have a pathway to production?
Well, in my own portfolio, I have a bunch of them. So yeah, I'm not turned off by those at all. It's just that for the kind of subscribers that I have now to my publications, they, or at least the idea that I sold them on, is that, you know, you are going to make some good money this year, you know. And so just for them, that's the kind of way things are going. As for myself, you know, I love the promise of a well-run junior, a company that can take $1 and turn it into $10. That, I love that idea. And as I said, I used to have a publication that focused on that, but there's plenty of heartbreak in this. I'm sure as many of your listeners know, because they own these stocks, right? I mean, you can own a great uranium company and it seems like it should do well, and year after year after year, that thing just breaks your heart, doesn't it? And so that's a whole different mindset of investing. And so just for the subscribers I have now, I just like things with a much to either be making money or they have a clear path to make money.
Well, Sean, just one more follow-up on the developers, because, again, we're normally skewed to either looking at producers that are revenue companies or pre-revenue exploration companies. The developers are sitting in the middle. They've got these projects with economics that always look good on paper. Sometimes they don't work out in real life. But one trend we've noticed is over and over again, whether you're looking at copper companies, gold companies, silver companies, even oil and gas companies, some of the development stage companies are not really getting valued anywhere close to where they've been in previous cycles. Their pounds in the ground or ounces in the ground are just not getting that kind of valuation. But we know when sentiment shifts, eventually that optionality kicks in. Do you like the optionality of how some of these can get re-rated, or do you see that as a pitfall for investors?
They're so undervalued now, there isn't much of a pitfall. It's more like stubbing your toe. But let's look at it from the other angle. Let's take Barrick Gold. Their production has gone down. Why has their production gone down? Because they need more mines. They have a big, fat war chest of cash. I know that they could buy explorers and then bring those mines on 10 years from now. But a smarter thing might be, you know what? Pick up some developers, and then you're 1, 2, 3 years away from production. There's no way they won't do it. I expect Barrick to make at least one acquisition this year, probably two or more. And so that can put some developers in a very sweet spot.
Oh man, any M&A coming into the sector would be great. Just interesting, as you even outlined earlier, lithium. They have kind of a different group of companies that seem to be willing to put money into some of those companies. Adds a different aspect, at least to that market. Whereas when it comes to precious metals, seems like we're just going back to the same group of companies saying, well, hopefully they get bought, or hopefully they buy somebody to free up capital for everybody else. Sean, yeah. Thank you as always for your time, buddy. Great chatting with you. Look forward to chatting with you in a couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your busy central bank meeting week.
Thank you very much.